cricket, lovely cricket. Welcome along, everyone, to listeners old and new. We are growing all the time, getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's 98 and I'm out. Phoenix FM's weekly cricket magazine show with me, Darren Mutu. On tonight's show, we update on the third test in Rajkot.
Me and my girlfriend are dying.
And as 123 million viewers tuned in to the Super Bowl 24, we asked the question, can Taylor Swift save county cricket?
I'll
have to try and get her on the show at some point, maybe. We also note Shamar Joseph's stunning progress. Lots going on around the world. We'll have latest scores and reports from games going on everywhere. And a lot of news from the counties with signings going on. And even news from Brentwood Cricket Club of quite a decent signing. All of that to come up. Music tonight from Funboy 3, The Fall, and Space. You're listening to Phoenix 98 on the FM dial in the Brentwood and Billericay area. Via the internet, head to phoenixfm.com and click on Listen Live. You can also go to Mixcloud. And if you have a smart speaker, just shout, play Phoenix FM. And you'll hear me coming out of that.
The players, them in a full suit of white. The players, them say them not broke no fight.
Right, plenty to get through tonight, including an interview with our old mate Richard Clark, the Grumbler. And I'll be getting his thoughts as the cricket season gets nearer and nearer. And if you follow WG Rumble Pants on the Twitter, which I sincerely suggest you do, he is providing a daily countdown. He's getting very excited. Alright, let's get on with it as normal. It's cricket birthdays of the week. And we'll start off. Umpire Nigel Long is 55. Ali Brown is 54. Billy Godelman, once of Essex, but more recently of Derbyshire, hits 35. Michael Lum, 44. Len Pascoe, older listeners will remember him as being a fearsome Australian fast bowler in the 70s. He's 74. Essex's Adam Wheater, 34. Chris Lewis, former guest on the show, 56. Desmond Haynes, 68. And Michael Holding, 70. My word. And wearing the England shirt currently, Mr. Ben Folkes, 31. Kiwi Daryl Mitchell, 36. AB de Villiers. I don't have an age for him, actually. Adil Rashid, 36. Ryan Hines of the West Indies, 43. And listeners, Chris Fox, 46. And James Saltese is 50. And remember, if you want to add your name or someone you know's name to the birthday list, get in touch via email, radio@phoenixfm.com. Title your mail, 98 Not Out Birthdays, and give me all the details, the name and the age that the person is going to be hitting. And if you want, just tell me a little bit about them, and I will add them to the birthday cricket birthdays of the week.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
Okay, England are back in action. They've cut short their holiday to Abu Dhabi, where they were seen playing golf and lying around the pool, and headed back to India to Rajkot. For the third test. Now, ahead of this, we did get the news that Virat Kohli will miss the rest of the test series against England for personal reasons, and equally, England spinner Jack Leach has been ruled out of the remainder of the tour with a knee problem. On the field, it was day one today, and Rohit Sharma and Ravindra Jadeja both struck centuries to take India to 326 for five after England made a stunning start to the first day of the third test in Rajkot. Asked to field after losing the toss, England had the hosts 33 for three inside the first hour and could have made that 47 for four had Joe Root held on to an edge at slip when Rohit was just on 17. Reprieved, he then stroked an elegant 131 in a fourth wicket partnership of 204 with Jadeja, who was promoted to number five on his return from a hamstring injury. After Rohit fell, debutant Sarfraz Khan dominated with a stand of 77 with Jadeja. Sarfraz with a first-class average of almost 70, and whose father was in tears when he was presented with his cap, crashed a sparkling 62 from just 66 balls. With Jadeja on 99 and Sarfraz keen to run a single, Jadeja sent him back too late to meet Mark Wood's direct hit from mid-on. Jadeja reached his 100 from the next ball, but the wicket of Sarfraz was a gift for England, just as the day seemed to be getting away from the tourists. Wood, on his return to the England side after missing the second test, was the pick of the bowlers. He returned 3 for 69, well supported by the ever-miserly James Anderson. So, at the close of play, India perhaps had marginally the better of the day, but England fought hard, and this is again shaping up to be another compelling contest in a series perfectly poised at one apiece. Remember, it's a five-test series. Now, Michael Vaughan's been chipping up, as he always does, and he said that England will rue the chances missed on day one of the third test. Joe Root, as I just mentioned, dropped Sharma on 27, with the home captain going on to make a century. Both Rohit and Ravindra Jadeja, who reached 110 out, could have been LBW, but England opted not to review as India moved on to 326 for five. England will be happy with the effort, but also will be thinking they could have bowled India out, says Vaughan.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
All right, so a little bit of music. This is Fun Boy 3. This track is called Our Lips Are Sealed.
See you. There's a weapon that
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Our lips are sealed by Fun Boy 3, who were formed by Linville Golding, Neville Staples and Terry Hall, all three of which were in the Specials before Fun Boy 3, and that was taken from the excellent album Tunnel of Love. Well worth digging that out and having a listen. Right, back to the cricket. MCC, the World Cricket Committee, has called for men's test series to be played over a minimum of three matches. Hear, hear. And for a wider restructuring of the financial distribution system in bilateral international cricket, stating that four member nations have a responsibility to ensure the game's overall health. About time, this is good stuff. The recommendations were made at a recent meeting of the group in Cape Town during the SA20, where MCC President Mark Nicholas is part of the commentary panel. Graham Smith, a member of the committee, is overseeing the tournament. There was a lengthy statement, I'm not going to read it out, don't worry, from the committee, which declared that it has long understood the record media rights deal negotiated for broadcasting ICC events from 2024 to 2027. And it's delivered global cricket a generational opportunity over the upcoming four-year period. However, what has become also clear is that despite this significant capital injection, many are doubting it will deliver tangible universal gain. While some have profited, many full and associate members are clearly struggling. This gap is growing and, if not addressed, will affect the playing and, perhaps more importantly, the development programs of the less affluent, perhaps irrevocably leading to a greater disparity of competitiveness. The MCC feels that the ICC full member nations should take a more collegiate approach to ensure that this period concludes with the global game in the strongest possible health. It's good to hear, but plenty of people have been calling for this for quite a long time now, notably Jared Kimber in his excellent documentary Death of a Gentleman, and also Clive Lloyd has been quite consistent in just saying the amount of money it costs the West Indies, not just abroad but also at home. If you didn't know, to fly from Jamaica to Guyana is about a 4.5, maybe a 5-hour flight. It's not just a case of island hopping, as you might romantically believe. So let's hope that these fine words get put into action and we do see a more even distribution of this huge amount of money that's floating around, and also an end to these silly two-match test series. Let's have minimum of three and we can see a result. That would be absolutely fantastic.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
Spring is kind of in the air. Blossoms are starting to appear on the trees, and there's a lot of people, WG Rumble Pants, that's name one, getting very excited about the approach of the new county cricket season, probably only a couple of months away or so. But there are lots and lots of rumblings that are going around the county circuit, particularly to do with the health of one or two of the counties and uproar amongst county membership. So I've got Richard Clark along to just talk about the state of county cricket and what can be done about membership structure. Richard, morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. So I'll start off with a bit of fake news that I just picked up on, that there are stories confirmed as fake, but doing the rounds in Indian cricketing circles about the IPL franchises coming over to England and there being a revamp of your favourite tournament, 100, to basically be turned into a mini IPL, and interestingly, in a T20 format. Now, this has all been refuted, but I kind of got the feeling that this might be just flying a kite. But do you think franchising in whatever format is the way that the county game is headed?
Well, I think it's a different thing. Franchises is one thing and the county game is another. And it's essentially what's going to happen is there's been a deliberate move for franchises to take over as the key teams within domestic cricket in the UK. That's kind of always been my point, that the county structure is the resilient part of the English domestic structure. And by going to something that is franchised, you are you'll get more money, but you are going to create instability. And also, we've seen with, and this is not anything about, you know, foreign people or anything like that, but overseas ownership in sport can jar and can lead to unfortunate circumstances, unfortunate outcomes. And we don't want to see that, because UK sport has long, deep roots, long traditions. That's actually part of its appeal. And so I worry about where it is. I worry about the fact that the county game has been denigrated so long now that people can turn around and say, well, it's weak, it's not the future, so let's put these franchises in above it. For me, that's always been about building the castle on foundations of sand. My argument has always been, you'll get less money, but you'll get more resilience in the game. It'll have more long-term future if you create a future based on rickety talent paths and the influx of short-term money. I worry about that future. I worry about that future in terms of the spread of the game and the long-term health of the game.
Yeah, I'm looking at some examples around at the moment which concern me and get my grey matter whirring. So we've seen Hampshire, a bit of a tie-up with an IPL franchise going on. You and I think last time we talked about the goings on at Yorkshire, and would that be the case with the return of Colin Graves? Would he be looking at some point to sell Yorkshire on to a potential new ownership, whether that's franchise or whatever else, to try and get his money back and out of the club? And the one that worries me the most is what's going on at Middlesex, who it just seems to be a drip feed of ever more worrying news regarding them and what's going on, which to me makes them look like easy prey for someone to come in, take them over, and whether their long-term future is at Lord's or not. But surely that's going to be a great big carrot for an envious foreign investor to come and take over Middlesex. And do we see counties moving away from the membership model into a more football, and I know you're well versed in football, but do we see cricket counties heading towards the football model where there's not a membership model anymore, that it's all owned, there's a board, there are shareholders, and the members become season ticket holders? Is that something that might be a grim dystopian future?
Yeah, there's four related but varied questions in there. I'll take the last one, if I may, first, about membership structure. Now, I've been critical about the future of the membership structure. What we're seeing, certainly, is that since, quite, you know, to the Lady Bayard version, is the members of county cricket in general beat the Strauss report, and it didn't come into fruition in terms of the two or three clauses that were most important. Obviously, there was a load of things to it. In terms of the restructuring of the county game, my fear and my thought, my prediction was that the cricketing authorities would react to that, and we would see in the near future the power of county membership neutered in some way, so that couldn't happen again. And because county membership is current, and my concerns about county membership is we're currently put in a position, like we might be in the future, where they're in the near future, where they're talking about, will we, it'll be put to county members, should counties agree to the extension of the tournament that shall not be named to 10 franchises, or shall we stay in the status quo? That's effectively, you vote for it or you vote against it. Well, actually, I want neither. Now, but I can't vote for that. So I'm always put in the position as a county member where I'm voting for no change, and I want change. I want change. But when change is on the table, I'm never spoken to. The tournament that shall not be named, that what's happened around that for me, is a disgrace. And fans have never been a part of it. Yes, it'll create more money. Yes, it'll reshape the game. Yes, the game needs reshaping. But to not involve fans in that process is a disgrace. Albeit counties have helped create that situation by being too intransigent in the past. So and if you look at what's happened, and to move on to the wider point about fans, if you look at what's happened with football, you've mentioned the football as a model. Okay, well, what we've got there is the it started in the 80s with home teams keeping all their gate receipts, which meant the big clubs became bigger. Then the Premier League starts and we get a big shift off of the top 20 clubs. Then, and it was supposed to be 16, actually, but that was part of the blueprint, but it ended up at 20. Then you've got the changing the rules about then everyone makes money. Everyone gets richer. And then they change the rules over overseas rights, because overseas TV rights are becoming more important. So the big six get more of those. And then that's not enough. And the big six want to split. Now, is that, I would argue that wouldn't have happened but for the amount of overseas owners in that top six. So my point about all this is, once you go down the path of trying to get more money into the game to fuel player wages, is what it's mostly about. Yes, the product is better, but it's actually about player wages, paid for by media rights. There needs to be some sort of check and balance to stop this. And there was no check and balance with the Premier League. It took fans invading stadiums, stopping major games going on, for that to happen. So now we've got golden shares, some fan ownership at the top. If you look what's happening in Germany, those clubs are trying to get away from the 50+1 model to sell media rights because they think they're uncompetitive. What's happening? The fans are protesting. They're protesting at major games because what we're seeing is the authorities that lead the game just are on this spiral where they have to get more and more and more and more and more. Football fans are that in the UK, but also abroad, are that little bit more bombastic, a little bit more active. Now, because the game was taken off terrestrial TV, it's become less played in schools. There's been a severing of the relationship with young people. So we've got a generation. When I was at school, I'm in my 50s now. When I was at school, there were people talking about cricket, about county cricket. I don't see it amongst the 30s, the 30-year-olds, and I'm lecturing some 20-year-olds at the moment. It's not resonant at all. They haven't got a clue. Which is why we needed change. Which is why we needed something to connect with a young audience. Which is why I maintain that the tournament that shall not be named is the wrong answer to the right question. So that covers off. So I think county membership is broken. I think we need to have some sort of relationship with a club where we have an input, but we don't act as a break, where we work together. And I actually think county cricket clubs should become clubs of social good and community basis. I think that's a way forward. But what I'm seeing is monetization, the destruction of tradition, of the creaming off of the top of a lot of hard work by a lot of volunteers and people who love the sport, in order to get TV money to pay elite players. That's what I'm seeing. And I don't want any part of that. So I've answered the end of the question. Talking about Middlesex, there's a big problem there. It's interesting with Middlesex, of course, because they've got no ground, and technically Middlesex doesn't exist as a county. So what are their assets? What are you buying if you buy Middlesex? Certainly, I think there's huge alarm bells coming out of there. They're not going to have an overseas player, for example. But the interesting thing will be, and this is a question going into county members, because if we do want, there is talk about if counties get franchises. So there are 18 franchises, some playing in the top division, some playing in the lower division. And there's an inability to move, giving clubs the ability to have 51% of those franchises. You know, so you get 49% is owned by somebody else. So you get outside investment, growing the game, investing the money. That's a good thing. The club's got 51%. As soon as they sell any part of that, they become a minority stakeholder. So their influence loosens. The other part, If county members agree to that and the club takes over and an individual takes over and owns that 51%, I can see in the future them selling that for a pretty penny. So I can see county members giving away a prized asset there that could be used, because everyone's saying, well, you may as well give this away because it isn't worth anything. Well, we might see in 5 years' time when that's transferred on that is an asset because someone's prepared to pay a shed load of money for it, a figure with six noughts on the end. And also, while county members might say, well, we're giving the club over to this custodian who we trust or semi-trust, well, the average ownership for a sort of a football club is like 4 to 8 years. So say 5 years' time, that person's selling it on. And, you know, if they're short of money or their priorities have changed or they're a bit cheesed off in some way, they can sell it to anybody. So, yeah, in answer to your long question, that's a long answer, I know. But there's worries all the way here. And what I really don't like, just to end off, is what we're getting is what I see so much in British life these days is vested interest spinning stories, spinning tales to suit themselves, you know, and in the end, look where the money is going and where it is going to be taken from. And that's what angers me the most and depresses me the most, that I see a lot of tales being spun using newspapers and using media to get it out there. And it's very depressing. It's very depressing. I've been through this within football. I've worked in football in that period of time where it was monetized greatly. Now we accept it a little bit more, but there is a better product. I get that. There is a better product. But what I don't like is the fibs dressed up to cover vested interests.
Yeah, as you say, that is a symptom of modern life in this country in whatever field or sphere you want to venture down. What about, I'm just going to chuck this one out there. What if the counties decided to get together and walk away from the ECB, form their own brand new organisation, form their own new brand new county setup with a new county championship a la the Football Premier League? Is that something that could happen, or is that dead in the water before it even starts?
I wonder what power they have. And also, one of the key relationships is between it is where the broadcaster places their money. We've seen that with Sky and the Premier League. The growth of Sky is based on that Premier League deal. And the ECB are wedded to Sky as well. And there's very interesting quotes from Michael Vaughan, who obviously works for the BBC, doesn't work for Sky, about the influence that the broadcasters had over the tournament that shall not be named. And he's with the BBC. So it's interesting. He was prepared to say what he did. That's why I was in favor of an independent regulator, right? Cause what we've got, and this is the issue with the European Super League, A22, the organization that is trying to create this European Super League, that they're arguing that UEFA are the regulator and the commercializer, right? So they control everything. And the ECB are that way too. Now, an independent regulator, you would argue, could break that. I don't think it's going to be set up in a way that an independent regulator will have that power. I think the way it's being set up is mostly to look at some of the issues around diversity that we've had issues with. So, yes, I think it's potentially feasible, but I don't think there's, you know, you need a broadcaster to go with you. You need money. One of the issues around the European Super League is that it was, if they've had a broadcaster set up, they said they did, but they didn't release it in such a way that it was confirmed. That amount of money would have taken people with them. You look at what's happening in Saudi Arabia and football at the moment, and other sports as well. If you're throwing a lot of cash at it, they're going to come to you. So, what money could be put forward to create that league, and would it be enough to get sufficient talent away from the franchise leagues, which are going to exist, albeit there'll be a rationalization of what that product is and how that works. But, you know, it's interesting because part of the issue we've got with the T20 leagues is they're all over the place because there's no governing body. I know there's the ICC, but they're not really running the calendar in that way. Well, the ECB, we do have one, but they're so wedded with Sky, and they're not, despite everything, they're not batting for the county game. They're still using the players that come through the county game, as we've seen with the recent talent that's come into the England team. It all comes from the county game, right? So how they square that circle, if they continue to undermine the counties, I don't know. But I don't know how you set up an alternative league unless you've got some cold, hard cash.
Okay. Just following on from your comments there, something interesting as well. All the counties are knee-deep in signing new players and new contracts. Quite a lot of them seem to be, particularly the overseas players, are shorter term than we've seen before. So, for example, they'll be around for the first four games of a season or the first stage of the blast. And there seems to be a growing pattern amongst white ball franchise players, given that this proliferance of franchise cricket and chuck into the mix the T20 World Cup in the middle of this summer. But I've just noticed as well, players jumping ship. So if they're in a franchise team that isn't doing that well and doesn't look like it's going to progress to the later stages of that tournament, the players leaving those teams to head to another tournament to see if they can, you know, power on there. So this whole notion of loyalty and whatever else, I mean, it's barefaced capitalism. It's players just chasing the dollar wherever it is. To me, that is really worrying that they've got this ability, probably driven by agents, to jump ship as and when it suits.
Yes, I think there was reports that was it one of the players that got down to the final stages of the Big Bash moved across and forwent the latter stage of the Big Bash. I'm not sure who it was, but yes, but they're freelance players. But they're freelance players now, and that breaks one of the emotional ties that fans have with players. I mean, for example, you look at Dan Lawrence. Okay, I mean, Dan Lawrence has left Essex. I got no problem with Dan Lawrence at all. You know, he came through the ranks. Even when he announced he was leaving, he did his best for Essex. He put in some good scores. He's a little bit more consistent when he said he was leaving than in the previous 18 months. But now I'm not bothered about him because he didn't play for Essex, you know. Yeah. He's still, you know, like Ben Foulkes, he's still a feather in the cap for the Essex youth system. But I care less than I did because he doesn't play for Essex. Whereas Paul Walter going and doing really well in the Big Bash, really pleased for him because he's still connected with the clubs. So if players are going to break those bonds quickly and more quickly and more quickly, it just it changes the nature of the sport. It changes the nature of the sport in the sense that if you've got players who have less connection with the club, then you feel a little bit less connection with the club. In the sense that, you know, when you're a football fan, you know, that player who's played 500 games and been with you for 10 seasons, or that player that's come through the youth team, that's Fan Singh, he's one of our own, because it means more, right? The players that come and go, okay, yeah, fine, but they come and go, right? And if you're going to have 11 players that come and go, And yet again, cricket's got a history of this, you know, going back to William Clark back God knows how many centuries ago. They have a history of it, but we love our teams. We turn up for our teams. And if we're not turning up for our teams and we're turning up for what is an entertainment product, a little bit like the US, you know, I worked in US soccer as well for a couple of years, and it's more of an entertainment product. So, you know, when I work for a major league soccer club, and at the start of the season, when the NFL teams and the basketball teams were playing, it doesn't matter what we were doing, our crowds were low. In the intervening period, in the middle, our crowds were good. Didn't matter what we did, but because the sports fans from that city would move across temporarily. But the roots were not deep. The roots were not deep. And one thing that I want to come through in this conversation is I'm concerned about, you know, poisoning deep roots of cricket. The deep roots, the thing that makes the volunteers come out, the thing that made me throw in my membership during COVID to Essex and donate extra money to keep the club running. Now, that is because of deep roots. That's because of my father and my brothers and, you know, going back 20 years. And so, you know, what we're seeing it all across sport, that the deep-rooted fan is not valued, and especially in cricket, because they want to make more money than they are at the moment. Albeit, we need to change.
Yeah, I'd agree with that 100%. And I think it seems to me to be more about viewing figures rather than fans in the stadium. Hence, we see so many games with empty stadiums, but they're on TV.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's an interesting point with, I mean, I'll throw it back to you, because you and Webby were running big local clubs, right? You need loads of volunteers. You've got to get people up and doing stuff for free, and that's not pro sport. You know, and I got the sense from the pair of you that it's harder to get the volunteers you need to run a club.
Oh, massively. And the burden falls on the same few people to do more and more because they are the ones that turn up.
So when their time comes, they get too old or they move on or whatever, who's coming through?
Exactly right. You know? Exactly right. Maybe we need to get Taylor Swift along to Vitality Blast final stage.
Well, I hear she's working on her off spin. So,
all right, Rich, we'll wind it up there. Brilliant to talk as always. And we will speak to you on 98 again very, very soon.
Yeah, sorry to be so downbeat, but
I need
April to come along to cheer me up because there's existential threats all over this game. So let's get back to April and get ourselves a reason why we should still believe in this great game.
My thanks to the Grumbler. Miserable as always, but that's why he is the Grumbler. But some excellent points. A great conversation. And I know loads of you have been lighting up social media messaging, just giving us your thoughts, including Dan Hagger. And this next one is a request from Bumble, who I was chatting to the other day ahead of his return to covering Test cricket with TalkSport 2. And he asked for The Fall. This is No Bulbs. We'll be right back.
That's The Fall and No Bulbs, as requested by Bumble, who I'm told is listening in. Good evening, sir. Best you get to bed soon. You've got to be up early. Day two from Rajkot. You're listening to Phoenix FM. It is 6:48. This is 98. Not about coming to you live from Studio One at Phoenix FM Towers. Keep it locked at 7 o'clock after me. The wonderful John Chubb is here with the Non-League Hour. Excellent show, that. Then at 8, Gareth Williams. Bumper to bumper. And then at 10, Madeline Christie is here with the Night Shift. Country music, old and new. An excellent listen, that one. And remember, if you want to listen back to this show or just download it so you can check it out whenever you want, head to phoenixfm.com and look under programs. You will find tonight's show there. Should be available from about 9 o'clock onwards. Just gives me time to get home, have something to eat, and download the show and edit out all the rough bits.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
All right, some cricket news to squeeze in before the close. Now, the West Indies have wrapped up a multi-format tour in Australia with a 37-run victory over Australia in the third T20 International at Perth. And the fairy tale continues for Shamar Joseph, the West Indies quickie who ran through Australia for a famous test win last month. Joseph, a former security guard who only made his professional debut last February, has been handed an Indian Premier League deal. The 24-year-old replaces Mark Wood at Lucknow Supergiants. The move is the latest leap in an extraordinary journey which began in earnest at the Gabba with a fourth innings, 7-wicket haul to give the West Indies their first test victory over Australia on Australian soil in 27 years. He bowled his side to glory despite a toe injury that forced him to retire hurt while batting. He then bowled unchanged from the beginning of his spell until uprooting Josh Hazlewood's off stump to fabulous scenes and the birth of a phenomenon whose star has risen rapidly. He was named player of the series for his 13 wickets in 2 tests. And West Indies white ball coach Darren Sammy, friend of the show, admitted he had thrown his name into the ring for the 2020 World Cup this summer. He's also been picked up for a Pakistan Super League gig at Peshawar Zalmi as a partial replacement for Gus Atkinson, while an ILT20 debut was thwarted by a blow to his toe, suffered when Mitchell Stark pinned him with a Yorker in Brisbane. All of this despite a T20 career so far spanning 2 matches and 0 wickets. Now, Shamar joins Lucknow for roughly £285,000, with Wood believed to have been withdrawn for the management of his workload ahead of the T20 World Cup, which will be in the Caribbean and the United States in June and July. And if that wasn't enough for the youngster, Everest Cricket Club in Georgetown, Guyana, that's where my old man's from, they have announced they will rename the north end of their ground as the Shamar Joseph End. Absolutely fantastic.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Other test matches going on around the world. New Zealand are hosting South Africa. You will remember this is a heavily weakened South African side that's touring down there. And then the second test at Seddon Park. New Zealand are 40-1 in their second innings, chasing 227 runs to win with 9 wickets in hand. Now, that South African team is weakened because the senior players were told to take part in the SA20, which has now come to its conclusion. Sunrisers Eastern Cape has won the 2024 SA20 after winning it last year, and it's another T20 title for Essex's Simon Harmer and Adam Rossington. Somerset's Tom Abel won player of the match in the final. He's had a great tournament this year with 286 runs, averaging 48, including 3 half centuries across 9 matches. Other tournaments concluding this week, the Under-19 World Cup. Remember, if you were listening last week, Charles Dagnall was telling us about what he was seeing from it down there covering it. Well, Australia has won the Under-19 World Cup for the fourth time after a 79-run victory over India in the final. India must be getting fed up of getting beaten by Australia in finals. Australia posted a competitive 253-7 from their 50 overs as Harjas Singh top scored with 55, while Raj Limbani took 3-38 for India. Indian opener Ardash Singh compiled a patient 47, but only three other India batters made double figures as they were dismissed for 174. Marley Beardman finished pick of the bowlers for the Aussies with 315. Australia's victory was the first time they had won the trophy at under-19 level since 2010. And just for the record, if you're not feeling sick enough, Australia now hold the Under-19 Men's World Cup, the Men's Cricket World Cup, the Women's Cricket World Cup. They are World Test Champions, and they also hold the Women's T20 World Cup. Now, sticking with women's cricket, Darcy Brown took 5-21 as Australia's women ripped through the South African batting lineup, skittling the visitors for 76 on day one of the first test at the Wacker. In reply, Australia were 251-5 at the close, with Alyssa Healy just missing out on a ton, being caught and bowled by Delmi Tucker on 99.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
Quick whiz around the counties, and Ashley Giles has admitted that Worcester may be forced to leave their new road home in the not too distant future, as the ground's regular flooding risks rendering the pitches unusable. The Worcestershire Chief Executive was speaking at the inaugural episode of Three Pairs Chat, an in-house chat show which was launched by the county this month. New Road has once again suffered from serious flooding this winter, with the ground staff unable to get onto the square between October the 22nd and the middle of January. Giles has warned that the club's first home game of the season against Durham in the county championship could be in jeopardy with the extremities of this winter, meaning further flooding can't be ruled out between now and April. There were a number of total floods, some part flooding, said Giles, but conditions are bad. We are very lucky with our grounds team and they work incredibly hard. Right now, it will remain a challenge to be ready for the first home game on April the 19th, and we know from history that we could still get another flood before the start of the season. There's nothing we can really do. We're on a floodplain, and that is the way it is, said Giles, who's a long-time resident of the area, but this is his first winter as chief executive. Close to home at Essex, Sam Cook has been today announced as the club vice-captain ahead of the 2024 season. The 26-year-old has taken 252 red ball wickets at an average of just 18.41 and 67 white ball wickets at an average of 29.64. Tom Wesley remains club captain. At Derbyshire, they will be captain this year in red ball by David Lloyd, and new joiner Sami Patel will be the white ball captain. At the Oval, Australia international all-rounder Aaron Hardy has re-signed for the club from May until the end of July. The 25-year-old will be available for three county championship games and the T20 Blast group stage. Hardy had a short stay with the Three Feathers in the 2022 season, playing three T20 games and one red ball match for the county championship winners. Fellow countryman Sean Abbott will also join Surrey for a third spell this summer. The 31-year-old previously played for the championship holders in 2021 and 2023. Last year, Abbott picked up 37 wickets, an average of less than 25, and scored more than 450 runs, an average of just over 45. In the T20 Blast, he played a record equaling 34-ball century, remember that, against Kent Spitfires at the Oval. He will be available for four county championship games and eight Vitality Blast fixtures across May and June. And finally on the counties, Alex Hales has signed a one-year contract extension at Notts. Good news, or big news, locally. Brentwood Cricket Club, Webby's been busy, he's been on the phone. They have signed Sydney Sixers star Jordan Silk for the 2024 season. Absolutely stunning signing. Well done to all concerned with that. And staying with Brentwood, remember that England cricket returns to the Old County Ground on Friday the 19th of July. A PCA Masters game will be taking place. It's a great day out, hospitality. If you want a table in the hospitality tent, email events@brentwoodcricketclub.co.uk for full details. And that's it. I shall be back next week for more 98 Not Out. Remember, you can check out the podcast, you can download the show, but we'd love to have you back next week. Playing us out tonight, ahead of John Chubb, this is an old track from 1977. This is Space and Magic Fly.